Welcome to Chemistry of the Mind, Unlocking the Brain Secrets. I'm particularly fascinated by how our brains manage something as complex as language, and today we're diving into two key players, Broca's and Vranick's areas.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, we effortlessly string words together, understand complex sentences. It's a miracle we take for granted. I'm eager to explore the intricacies of these brain regions and what happens when they malfunction.
Exactly. So the big question is, how do these areas work together to orchestrate this symphony of communication? And what can aphasia, the language disorder arising from damage to these areas, teach us about the brain's intricate language network?
Let's start with Broca's area. It's traditionally been linked to speech production. Pierre-Paul Broca's work with patients like patient Tan was groundbreaking.
Right. Tan could understand language, but could only utter that single syllable. It highlighted the specificity of brain function damage to one particular area can selectively disrupt speech production.
And now we know Broca's area isn't just one homogenous blob, right? It's got different parts, the pars orbicularis, pars triangularis, each with seemingly distinct roles.
Precisely. And it's not just about producing words. Studies show it's involved in comprehending complex sentences too, especially those with tricky syntax. So it's more nuanced than simply speech production.
Yeah, fascinating. So damage to Broca's area leads to what we call Broca's aphasia or expressive aphasia. They know what they want to say, but they just can't get it out.
It's like having the words on the tip of your tongue, but perpetually. Their speech becomes telegraphic, lacking the grammatical glue that holds sentences together. Drive. Store.
Mom, instead of mom drove me to the store.
Heartbreaking, but so insightful. It shows how crucial this area is for constructing grammatically correct sentences. And this is where it gets even more interesting. Sometimes significant damage to Broca's area doesn't cause severe aphasia.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, there are cases where tumors slowly destroyed Broca's area, yet the patient's speech remained relatively intact. This suggests the brain's incredible plasticity. Other areas can sometimes compensate.
So the brain can reroute language functions. Fascinating. Now let's turn to Vranick's area. This one's all about comprehension, right?
That's the traditional view. Carl Vranick found that damage to this area in the temporal lobe resulted in fluent but meaningless speech.
The classic word salad, where words are jumbled together without making sense. Unlike Broca's aphasia, they can speak fluently, but their words lack meaning.
Exactly. But just like Broca's area, our understanding of Wernicke's is evolving. It seems to be part of a larger network involved in processing various types of auditory information, not just words.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even the precise location of Wernicke's area is still debated, highlighting the complexity of pinning down these language functions to specific spots in the brain.
It really underscores how much we still have to learn about these incredible language centers in our brains.
So we were talking about Vranick's area and how it's not just about comprehension. It's way more nuanced than that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, think about all the things we do with language, understanding metaphors, sarcasm, the tone of voice. Vranick's area seems to be involved in all of that.
It's mind-boggling. And the fact that its exact location is still debated, what does that tell us?
Well, to me, it suggests that these language functions aren't confined to neat little boxes in our brains. It's more like a network, a complex interplay of different regions.
Yeah, a network, exactly. And the research on Wernicke's aphasia really brings that to light, doesn't it? The word salad, the fluent but meaningless speech.
It's tragic, but so revealing. It shows how crucial this area is for assigning meaning to words. And the fact that they're often unaware of their impairment, that's fascinating and a little unsettling.
It is. It makes you wonder about our own sense of self, our awareness of our own cognitive processes. And what about the cases where Vranick's area is damaged but comprehension remains relatively intact?
Right. That's where the idea of brain plasticity comes in again, other areas stepping up to compensate, taking over the function. It's incredible how adaptable the brain can be.
So it's not a simple one-to-one mapping damage here equals this deficit. It's far more intricate. And then there's the evolutionary perspective, right?
Oh, absolutely. Finding similar regions in non-human primates, it opens up a whole new avenue of exploration. How did language evolve? What are the building blocks of communication across species?
Big questions. And I think what's really exciting is how these newer neuroimaging studies
are giving us a much more detailed picture of what's going on.
Definitely. fMRI, DTI, these tools are allowing us to see the brain in action, to track the flow of information, the connections between different areas. It's a whole new level of understanding.
It is. And I'm particularly intrigued by the research on how Wernicke's area handles ambiguity in language. Think about it. We encounter ambiguous words all the time, yet we effortlessly navigate those ambiguities.
It's remarkable, isn't it? And Wernicke's seems to be the key player in resolving those ambiguities, using context, intonation, all those subtle cues. It's like a linguistic detective piecing together the meaning.
Exactly. And even beyond spoken language, its role in understanding nonverbal cues, facial expressions, body language, that adds another layer of complexity.
It does. And it makes me wonder, how does this all tie into other cognitive processes like memory and attention? Are they intertwined or are they separate systems working in parallel?
That's a great question. And the fact that cognitive deficits often co-occur with aphasia, it suggests a deeper connection, doesn't it? Maybe these cognitive abilities are the foundation upon which language is built.
It's a fascinating area of research, and I think we're only just scratching the surface. There's so much more to discover about these incredible language centers in our brains. And the more we learn, the more we appreciate the sheer complexity and beauty of human communication.
So we've been talking about these fascinating language centers in the brain, Broca's and Wernicke's areas, and how much we still don't know.
It really is remarkable. I mean, think about it. We use language constantly without even thinking about it, but the underlying neural mechanisms, they're incredibly complex.
Exactly. And damage to these areas causing aphasia can be devastating, but it also provides such valuable insights into how language is organized in the brain.
Absolutely. Like with Broca's aphasia, the struggle to produce speech, the telegraphic style, it highlights how crucial this area is for the structure of language.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Wernicke's aphasia, the fluent but meaningless speech, for C-spatial, it's like the words are there, but the meaning is lost. It's like a disconnect between words and concepts, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And what's so striking is that they're often unaware of their impairment. It's like they don't realize their speech is nonsensical. That's unsettling.
It is. It makes you wonder about our own awareness of our cognitive processes. And what about the cases where there's damage, but comprehension or production remains relatively intact?
That's where the idea of brain plasticity really comes into play, isn't it? The brain's ability to reroute functions, to compensate for damage. It's amazing.
It is. It suggests that a language isn't localized to just these two areas, but it's distributed across a network, right?
A network, exactly. A complex interplay of different regions all working together. And what's really exciting is how new neuroimaging techniques are allowing us to see this network in action.
Oh, tell me more.
Well, fMRI, for example, can show us which areas are active during different language tasks. DTI can track the connections between areas, showing us how information flows through the network.
That's fascinating. It's like we're finally getting a glimpse under the hood, seeing the intricate wiring of the language system.
Exactly. And the more we learn, the more we realize how much we still don't know. It's a constant process of discovery.
So we've covered a lot of ground regarding Broca's and Wernicke's areas and aphasia. It's really quite amazing how intricate language processing is.
It is, yeah. It's something we take for granted until something goes wrong. And then suddenly, something as simple as forming a sentence becomes a monumental task.
Exactly. And the differences between Broca's and Wernicke's aphasia are so striking.
Right. One, you can understand but not speak fluently. The other, you can speak fluently, but what you say is wackus. Well, gibberish, it's like two sides of the same coin, isn't it? Both essential for communication, but in completely different ways, and the fact that they're often studied in isolation. I wonder if that's given us a slightly skewed perspective.
Oh. How so?
Well, we talk about Broca's area for production, Wernicke's for comprehension, but it's clearly more complex than that. They work together, along with other areas, as a network.
A network, yeah. That seems to be the emerging consensus. And the research with fMRI and DTI seeing the brain in action, that's really pushing the field forward.
Definitely. Being able to see which areas light up when someone's processing language, the connections between areas.
It's incredible. It's like we're finally getting a glimpse into the inner workings of this incredibly complex system. And the more we learn, the more we realize how much we still don't know. So true. Like the fact that the precise location of Wernicke is still debated.
What does that tell us? Well, to me, it suggests that these functions aren't neatly confined to specific little boxes in the brain. It's more of a
distributed system with overlapping functions and
an incredible plasticity.
Plasticity, yeah.
The brain's ability to rewire itself to compensate for damage.
It's remarkable. It gives you hope, you know, that even after a devastating injury, there's still potential for recovery. Absolutely. And the evolutionary perspective. Finding similar regions in other primates, it just opens up so many questions. How did language evolve? What are the fundamental building blocks of communication across species?
Big questions, yeah. Questions that'll keep researchers busy for decades to come. But I think we're on the right track. With these new tools, new technologies, we're getting closer to understanding the mysteries of the language brain. It's an exciting time to be in this field.
It is. Well, I think we've covered just about everything we set out to discuss today. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.